Welcome to this edition of the Virginia Bioscience Podcast. This edition features a presentation by Dr. Dietrich Stefan, the CEO of the Ignite Institute for Individualized Health. The program was recorded December 17, 2009 at the Virginia Bioscience Business Roundtable in Richmond. The event, sponsored by the Virginia Biotechnology Association and numerous national and statewide partners, was focused on the latest developments in the Virginia bioscience industry. Dr. Stefan, a human geneticist, formerly served as the Deputy Director of Discovery Research at the Translational Genomics Research Institute, known as TGen, in Arizona, and was a co-founder and the former Chief Scientific Officer of Navigenics, a personalized genetic testing company. He received his B.S. in biology biochemistry from Carnegie Mellon University in 1991. He went on to obtain his Ph.D. in human molecular genetics in 1996 from the University of Pittsburgh. Stefan completed a fellowship in 1999 at the National Human Genome Research Institute. The Ignite Institute, to be located in Fairfax County, Virginia, will be a 300,000-square-foot, 245-million personalized medicine institute that will employ more than 500 scientists by the time it is completed. The program lasts approximately 15 minutes. For more information about the biosciences in Virginia, please visit us on the web at www.vabio.org.
Thank you very much, and I'll try and be brief because I know the day is ending. Navigenics is actually my past life, and I'll touch on it, but my current life is trying to create a biotechnology cluster focused around personalized medicine here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, really trying to strategically leverage all of the assets that are present here in the, not only the Commonwealth, but the national capital area to provide a focal point for transformation of our healthcare system. I know that sounds grandiose, but we've done it before. This is an initiative that was spearheaded in Arizona by Governor Hull and then followed on by Governor Napolitano. The state after 9/11, people stopped going to play golf in Scottsdale, and so they decided they wanted to strategically invest in the knowledge-based economy, and so the public and private sector came together with about $150 million package. The city built us a building. The state put cash on the table in the private sector, third, 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 sort of like that. This is what resulted 7 years ago. And today, there exist two additional research buildings, a medical school, a biotechnology high school, an Alzheimer's disease center, a pharmacy program, et cetera. And so in just 7 years, we have seen dramatic economic growth in the middle of the desert, middle of nowhere, really. There were no assets to be leveraged, essentially, in Arizona. So we have experience in doing this, and what I decided to do after being scientific director in Arizona and contributing to the bio-based economy, not only did we build the infrastructure there, but we spun out about 20 different companies. One of the learnings there was we didn't build a venture capital community, and so all the money came from the coasts. What happened was a lot of the companies went to the coast and we had brain drain, and the thing started to get a little wobbly on its foundation. So that was one of the key learnings we're going to try and bring to this initiative. But the goal really, after leaving that institute to decide what I wanted to do next, was to try and address this problem. This country is going to tank because of chronic disease in the next 20 years if we don't do something about it. Today, we're spending 17% of our GDP on healthcare. We've all heard this. In 20 years, it's going to rise to 40% if left unchecked. We're hearing a little bit of reform stuff around efficiency and non-redundancy in healthcare, just trying to get the business models right, that hopefully promises to squeeze out, you know, 20% of costs. But that's only going to push the curve out a little bit. It's not going to truly reduce the burden of disease. And so what we wanted to do with this institute was try and build a nonprofit genome institute where the research was aligned to the marketplace, the 15 to 20 diseases that we're all going to get that are going to cost 80% of the healthcare dollars in the back end of our lives. Try and align the research verticals and the infrastructure to those diseases and surround the nonprofit with incubator space, capture a venture capital syndicate, and then slap the whole thing onto the side of a community-based healthcare setting so it could really abbreviate the cost and time to market for new drugs, new diagnostics, and new medical devices that we hope will bend that curve a little bit. And I'll give you a couple examples of how we think that's going to happen, but I have to say that the Commonwealth and Fairfax County have been spectacular to work with. This actually all started in my apartment in San Francisco about a year and a half, and I looked at my wife and I said, can we really do this? And just started as a grassroots effort. It wasn't governor-initiated. And I went around, got four or five regional institutions to kick in about $1 million, hired the same team that did the business plan for us in Arizona to come do the business plan for us here. It was PricewaterhouseCoopers team. Emerged out of that process, and it was really a process of information gathering and synthesizing, and Cheryl Moore was on our task force, as were others. Emerged out of that with a fundable business plan, slapped on top of that an economic impact analysis by a third party, and then took that to both the county and the Commonwealth. It was fascinating, and so we eventually got to the point where we had two governors who said, we want to do this, and hopefully at that point, which happened on November 16th, we're now sort of in the same situation as we were in Arizona, where we had political support at the highest levels within the state, that now the ball will start rolling downhill and we'll get private sector follow-on investments. The notion here is really, and you all know this, but really at birth, to understand the individual's hardwiring, supplant newborn screening, for example, with whole genome sequencing. The day is coming. It's less than a decade away. And put that information into a data vault. The Commonwealth is uniquely positioned with respect to IT infrastructure and companies like VeriSign and others to be able to secure and authenticate that data. I mean, people are already emailing their genomes around on the internet, and think about the privacy and discrimination issues associated with it, not to mention the bandwidth issues of pushing massive data files around and that sort of thing. So it's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons we decided to come to the Commonwealth. But then later in life, you'll see you can unmask other portions of the genome. Say in adolescence, you can unmask regions that might let you understand the hardwired predisposition to disorders like autism, and I'll give you a tangible example of that. And then when the person turns of age and they can give informed consent, you can imagine them unmasking the heritable risk factors that might predispose them to chronic diseases, the ones I started out talking about, and the ones we're all going to get. And then together with their physician, going on a portfolio sort of management journey with them, not financial portfolio, this time a health portfolio. So they get a rank-ordered list of what their hardwired risks are, and then you could imagine them going on a focused exposure mitigation plan, a focused biomarker monitoring or screening plan that's uniquely tailored to their hardwiring, and then early detection and put on the right drug at the right dose at the right time. It sounds futuristic, but in the research space, this information is aggregated quite quickly. And again, once they have disease, you can manage them more appropriately to keep them healthy longer. And we've heard a lot about information technology and research databases from folks like Oracle and Microsoft and Google. And all of those are really meant to aggregate molecular information, clinical information, exposure information into essentially Skynet, which could then learn in an iterative way how to keep people healthy. Let's hope it doesn't do anything else. But really, you know, the foundation of all of this is we've finally gotten the technologies to deeply and accurately molecularly characterize individuals. And we're not going to be taking people apart in our institute. Rather, you can do this from a drop of blood or a tissue sample. But really sift through the genome, the transcriptome, the proteome, and the metabolome in a comprehensive way. Lay out those molecules next to of individuals with disease versus without disease and simply see what's different. And so that's exactly what the technology infrastructure is going to be like. And these are pictures of my lab from Arizona that we're currently transitioning here. But next summer, and this is not Arizona, this actually happens to be the Broad Institute, by summer of next year at the CIT, we hope to have one or two floors of that building built out and occupied with about 100 investigators by the end of 2010. And then we're going to put up our permanent facility and we're going to leave. And we're going to leave this as an asset for the Commonwealth to start and incubate seed and Series A companies. So it's going to be state-of-the-art wet lab facilities for genetics research. A couple of examples, and I'll keep it quick. This is a pedigree of individuals at the bottom here who have autism spectrum disorder. We were able to quickly go in and scan through the genomes of all these individuals, and within 3 days, drop out the single nucleotide out of 6 billion that was broken, publish this in the New England Journal of Medicine. But more interestingly, we went back into this family found four additional individuals in the extended family who were mutation positive, had 100% chance of getting this horrific form of autism. Actually, I have to cut half these half the brain of these kids out to control their seizures. Went in and identified them pre-symptomatically based on the understanding we're able to use an off-label compound. This happened to be Valproate. And coach them through that critical period of brain development where they would have transitioned to this horrible disease. Now they're 4 and 5 years old and perfectly symptom-free. And so this is really the first major gene that was identified causing autism. It's now been widely replicated. And as you know, almost 1 in 100 kids are born with autism. This gene accounts for about 10% of them. And so there's light at the end of the tunnel with respect to a therapeutic in this instance. Done a lot of work in Alzheimer's disease as well, trying to understand the molecular basis under this disease. And again, just some examples, but this, within a year, we were able to tease out the circuit that looks like it controls short-term memory performance and just identify some compounds that hit that. Moved those compounds right into preclinical models, had a 75% hit rate with respect to efficacy. And those of you who are in drug development understand that that's pretty high. And so these new technologies are incredibly elegant in teasing out the real pathobiology of diseases. Published it in Science, which was great, but more importantly, moved it within a year of starting the experiment, moved it into the commercial space. So this is a little spin out that was actually funded by Steve Case. It was Steve Case's venture fund's first investment, and it gave them a 6x return when we sold this to a German pharmaceutical company who's now continuing the development of these molecules. Same thing in ALS. We were able to drive significant philanthropic support into a national program around understanding sporadic Lou Gehrig's disease, which is one of these nasty disorders that is totally intractable at this point in time. Very quickly, we were able to publish this in a good journal, but then immediately transition into phase two trials, again, with some experimental molecules that had been shown to be safe but not effective in other instances. Cancer, we all know there's incredible successes in cancer. This happens to be a pediatric brain tumor where we were able to use expression profiling to identify kids who had progressed to a malignant form of the cancer and then kicked off that gene list to a company in San Diego who's now developed a compound that's in phase one and melts these tumors in these kids pretty effectively. This is Silene Pharmaceuticals. So I guess the notion here is that a nonprofit genome institute, think of the Broad Institute or TGen, that's the size of this thing that we're going to build, that's aligned to the marketplace, is kicking out intellectual property, can rapidly commercialize this. This isn't a long-term play. I think we can build critical mass to commercialize these things and kick them out into the ecosystem. Here's another company that we started. This is one where we took venture money from the West Coast. And you can see these are pretty good venture firms. I mean, Kleiner and Moore Davidow and Sequoia are sort of the top of the heap with respect to venture folks. And we had folks like Brooke Byers and John Doerr and others on our board to really make sure that disruptive medical innovation is, you build a platinum team around it and you can affect change in healthcare system. Actually got money from Google for that one and acquired a molecular diagnostics lab and were able to drive significant interest. Perhaps one of the things I'm most proud of is the educational programs that I started at TGen that will continue to do this new nonprofit institute. And this is a picture on the left. You see on the very left, Annie Lee. And I should preface this by saying Arizona is actually the 48th best place in the country to get a public education, which is amazing, and not for the right reasons. But we were able to bring these two kids into the lab. And in a summer, Annie Lee was able to clone out a gene that caused leukodystrophy in kids. Basically, it melts the brain of kids. And Albert Shee wrote all the math to be able to interpret these DNA chips. And together, they won the Westinghouse Science Fair, which is kind of a big deal. Both got $100,000 and were early accepted into Harvard. And what this allowed us to do was then, again, build out significant educational programs. This is our biotech high school that we built. So we built an educational cluster as well as a research cluster, and we were able to endow that program in perpetuity with a gift from a local foundation so we could host 50 kids every year within the Genome Institute instead of having them go to McDonald's and work. So the notion that there was a pre-existing model based in economic development, we could do the same thing here given a more robust ecosystem is, I guess, the message I'm trying to get across. And we're very highly outward-facing. This is an example of the collaborations that I've had over the last 10 years. So really are very excited and interested to work with people, not only across the Commonwealth, but across the world. And the goal here is to shine a spotlight on this region and really drive things forward. So what does success look like? I really want to bend the curve a little bit in terms of prolonging the healthy lifespan and driving some costs out of it on the back end of life. Hopefully use those costs for other things. And then create a robust pipeline and an emerging set of companies. So thank you.
Thank you for downloading the podcast of the Virginia Biotechnology Association. For more information, please visit us at www.vabio.org.